This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. If you're of a certain age or you've spent time in an arcade, this music will likely ring a bell.
Test your mind. Test your mind.
Since its debut in 1992, Mortal Kombat has become one of the best-selling video game franchises ever, spawning 18 games and 3 feature films. When it comes to the first two movies, fans have very strong, mostly negative thoughts about them. But now, 26 years after the first movie, Mortal Kombat is back. The latest film broke box office records with the biggest opening weekend of any R-rated movie since the start of the pandemic. And for this month's edition of the 1A Movie Club, we're talking about it, so consider this your spoiler warning. We're joined by Dave Schilling. He's the co-host of the Galaxy Brains podcast from Polygon. Dave, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Gita Jackson. She's a staff writer at Motherboard from Vice and the co-host of Waypoint Radio. Welcome back to the show, Gita.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And with us, Karen Hahn, a staff writer at Slate. Karen, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so excited to get into Mortal Kombat with you guys.
Karen, keep it nonviolent. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so you wrote a review of the new Mortal Kombat movie for Slate. The title is The New Mortal Kombat Movie Rules. So I feel like I know the answer is there, but tell us what you thought of the movie.
I mean, I had so much fun with it. I was talking to a few friends and we were wondering, do we like this movie so much? Like, because movie going during the pandemic has been kind of such a lackluster year, or is it just because this movie is genuinely fun? I tend to think the answer to that question is the latter. It just does a good job of delivering exactly what it's supposed to, which is a bunch of guys fighting. Like, that is all that a Mortal Kombat movie has to do, and it absolutely accomplishes that.
Dave, what about you?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I'm going to disagree slightly. I did enjoy the movie, but it didn't offer the one thing every Mortal Kombat story is supposed to offer, and that is the Mortal Kombat tournament, folks. Not having the tournament is sort of like Star Wars not having a war in space in it.
So, were you a Mortal Kombat fan before this?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I am of a certain age to have been entranced by the video games, the movies, the whole mythology, the universe of it. So, I was kind of expecting, I turn on a movie called Mortal Kombat, there will be a Mortal Kombat tournament, and yet here we are in this non-Mortal Kombat tournament world, and I'm very perplexed.
Well, we got this voicemail from Will in North Carolina.
I saw the new Mortal Kombat movie, and I really liked it. I say this, of course, as a guy who hasn't really played a lot of it. I have very little outside knowledge, so some people are saying the main character was bad. I thought, you know, this guy doesn't know anything about Mortal Kombat. I don't know anything about Mortal Kombat. We're on the same level. The fights were awesome. Music was nice. A good blend of, like, pleasing the fans and having enough there to to have the general viewing public understand it.
Okay, Gita, I want to hear your take. Do you think this was a good movie, or was it good for a Mortal Kombat movie?
Oh, well, I watched it last night, and I have to say, not only did I really have a great time with it, it made me really yearn for the experience of seeing a movie in a theater with other people. There's so many moments in this movie that are clearly built. Like, you can really tell. I think it really takes seeing it outside of a movie theater, seeing it alone, to see how blockbuster action movies are built differently from other films. You can see that the film is paced towards these intense moments of celebration, where everyone in the room is going to have a vocal reaction. There are so many points where me and my partner would turn to each other and just be like, I wish we could hear everyone cheering during this moment. But, you know, not only that, I felt like, you know, there's actually an article up on Waypoint today by Cameron Kunzelman that goes into the plot of the Mortal Kombat games and how this movie actually reflects the expansiveness of the lore more accurately than doing a retread of the first original 1995 movie that covered the tournament arc. In fact, you know, Cameron says in this article, which I read this morning and I think is pretty informative, that a lot of the recent games don't actually have a tournament arc at all, or the tournament arc is, orthogonal or parallel to the actually important lore things that are happening. This feels feels like if this movie feels like it not only is a wonderful action movie that's a lot of fun that I wish I could see with a lot of people in a big room on a hot sunny day, but like it reflects the reality of what Mortal Kombat has become in the intervening years since its release.
Well, Stephen tweets, I have been a Mortal Kombat fan since I spent what must have been over $200 mastering Sonya Blade in 92. I really enjoyed the new movie, love the mythology and the way they explain the character's energy powers. It was ridiculous, but then I'm reminded that it is Mortal Kombat after all. What do you expect? And we sat down with Mortal Kombat director and producer Simon McCoy ahead of this show and asked him about the decision to introduce a new main character for the film, and here's what he had to say.
There were a couple of reasons, actually. Firstly, Mortal Kombat, over the last several decades of its existence, have brought out new characters all the time. It's become one of the things. So there's 80-odd characters now. And so if there was precedent there, and we felt it was okay to do that. It was kind of a Mortal Kombat thing to do. And then the other reason is we needed a fresh set of eyes inside the movie to take the audiences through it who may not be that au fait with all the information in Mortal Kombat, of which there is a lot. So that was the reason. They were the main reasons, actually. And the audience learns, allowed us to unlock and open up some of the information that we needed to.
Dave, what did you think about the introduction of this new main character, Cole Young?
Well, I agree with Simon about the need to have someone who can express the audience's befuddlement at any given point in a film like this. I think that's kind of a common trope in genre filmmaking, which is every once in a while a character needs to say, what exactly is going on right now? Who is that? Why is that happening? How come my chest is glowing? That kind of stuff. So it is a pivotal screenwriting trope. In a lot of these movies, going all the way back to, again, just to reference Star Wars, because I feel like Mortal Kombat has a lot in common with Star Wars, is Star Wars has multiple point of view characters that ask those questions. If it's Luke, if it's Han Solo, and then, you know, in the sequel trilogy, having Rey and Finn asking questions all the time. Like, that's important for these mythology-heavy films. Do I feel like it was a fantastic addition to the mythology of Mortal Kombat? No, but I understand why it was there. It was a tool with which to tell this story that is really probably one of the most elaborate mythologies in all of video games.
Karen, what about you?
I agree, and that I think he's sort of necessary for the movie because there's so much lore. Like, there's that card that comes up right after the initial sequence that explains the premises of Outworld and Earthrealm and what Mortal Kombat the tournament is. But I feel like having to explain too much of that via initial text would be too much. So it's helpful to have Cole there to kind of spool details out about like the arcana, about the Mortal Kombat symbols that they all have to show that they're champions. That said, I do think he's very much a movie character. Like, I don't think I could see him necessarily in one of the main games, at least not until they develop his powers a little bit more.
Now, Gita, Mortal Kombat has a ton of characters, and we got to see some of the most recognizable ones like Scorpion and Sub-Zero. How do you feel about the time the movie spent with the classic characters?
Well, I mean, actually, one of the things I wanted to point out was how nice it was to see that they had cast a black woman to play Melina. Mm-hmm. I know when the most recent Mortal Kombat introduced that character in the game, they had the rapper Megan Thee Stallion cosplay her as part of the announcement. And this game is like a huge game, very popular game in the fighting game community, which is a largely like black community, and this game means a lot to the black people. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, I'm disappointed that I didn't get to see a lot of Reptile, which is the character that my partner plays most often because he likes to do the acid stuff. But I also feel like every single appearance of each character like had a meaningful moment for fans of those characters. And you know, the way the movie is structured, it gives you a lot of reasons why the movie is focused on the characters it is focused on. But every time a legacy character shows up, everybody who's ever touched a Mortal Kombat game has a hell yes moment.
Well, Kelly tweets, it was a fun movie and definitely better than most video game adaptations. I'm looking at you, 93's Super Mario Brothers, and Josh Lawson as Kano stole the show. You know, Dave, I can imagine someone sitting at home and being like, what are they talking about? How familiar do you need to be with Mortal Kombat and the lore around the video game to enjoy the movie?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, as we've been talking about, this movie was designed from the ground up to hopefully introduce people to this franchise who aren't otherwise fans. But at the same time, it is peppered with references to the game, to allusions to things that you've seen in the other films or in the TV show, because there was a TV show very briefly, or the video game, the reboot, the most recent reboot. That means it's kind of hard to jump in completely. Like, you have to know a little bit about Mortal Kombat to like this movie.
We're talking all things Mortal Kombat and video game movies. We'll be back with more in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor USC Marshall School of Business. Discover where today's leadership innovations meet tomorrow's critical business challenges. USC Marshall School of Business Executive Education is where business professionals go for lifelong learning and career transformation. The short course, Purpose-Driven Leadership, delivers insights for creating trust, respect, influence, and collaboration while identifying your leadership purpose. Explore this and other programs at uscexecutiveeducation.com. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.
We're talking about the latest installment in the Mortal Kombat film franchise. Let's jump back into the conversation with some of your comments. Patricio tweets, Mortal Kombat delivered on all levels. I can't wait till Mortal Kombat 2. And Google Plus addict tweets, this movie was fun as hell. Even went to the theater for it. I'm in my mid-30s and a lifelong fan of the franchise. Well, we sat down with Mortal Kombat director and producer Simon McCoy and asked him about translating video game characters to film.
It was a really enjoyable experience, actually, studying each of these characters and seeing where they'd been. So we spent a lot of time, because it's been around for so long, and there's been so many iterations of each of these characters. In pre-production, we put up in this huge room we were all in. We put up all the every version we could possibly find and was given to us of every character over the years, and we put them up on the wall. And we realized that there was a common thread for each of the characters going through all the different iterations. And what I was trying to do was use those as a jumping off point to then realize these characters in the most powerful, connective way I possibly could. And so that when you see Scorpion for the first time, he looks like Scorpion, but there's a history and there's a nobility and there's more layers to him emotionally and literally in the costumes and so forth.
Now, Karen, Mortal Kombat is a fighting game. It has a lot of lore, but not a lot of dialogue and characterization. How successful do you think the movie was at fleshing out these video game characters?
With all due respect to Simon McCoy, again, I loved the movie, but I don't necessarily know that I would say that these characters struck me as particularly deep or any more developed than they are in the games. I think it's just, to a certain degree, a side effect of having so many characters at once. There's only so much explaining that you can do about where they're coming from and what's up with them. But on the same token, the things that they do in order to establish the characters, like Scorpion has that kunai that he throws with the chain, like almost immediately. Sub-Zero can freeze things. All the traits that they do keep are so iconic and also so immediately colorful that it's not necessarily a bad thing that you're not like, I don't understand all of this character's motivations and backstory.
Dave, what about you? As a Mortal Kombat fan, how did you feel about how the iconic characters were represented?
Oh, I think that everyone had a motivation of some kind or some chip on their shoulder that made them need to succeed in this environment, which I appreciated. Sonya, you know, trying to prove herself. Cole, not a classic character, but a very well-defined want and problem. Kano fills a role that's very important in that kind of middle section of the movie, being both antagonist and comic relief. I mean, I think Scorpion and Sub-Zero, do we know enough about them to really care about their rivalry? Not quite, but you get that prologue where they have the climactic battle where Scorpion is killed and then goes to the afterlife. That's enough for you to kind of invest on the level the movie needs you to invest in their journey.
Now, Gita, the 1995 film version of Mortal Kombat came under fire for its whitewashing of characters like Lord Raiden. Raiden is a Japanese character that was portrayed by a white actor. How do you think this version did at representing those characters?
Well, I like any movie where the number of white actors is two. So I had a pretty good time watching this. I feel like it's particularly important to note that they like hired some very renowned Japanese actors to, I mean, Hiroyuki Sanada as Scorpion is frankly perfect and doing everything that I want to see that character do. This is a franchise that's developed in and was created in Chicago, but the characters in the game are mostly Asian. So it's really nice to see the casting reflect that. We've moved beyond the time. Like, also, these actors are so beautiful. I just have to say, this is like a perfectly constructed blockbuster movie because every single person on screen is always the most beautiful person that could possibly be on screen at the time. The actor that played Liu Kang, Liu Dilin, is like just one of the most beautiful people I have ever seen in my life.
Well, Frank tweets, it was a joy to see them bring these legacy characters back to the big screen. You could feel the moments where the whole theater would have cheered while watching it at home on the couch. Ian has a different take. He tweets, not even taking into account Cole Young, I think the new Mortal Kombat movie was horrible. Bad story and terrible dialogue. I understand not 100% retelling the game story, but this missed the mark by a long shot. You know, Dave, along those lines, the first two Mortal Kombat movies are notoriously terrible. Just remind us what fans had to say about those films.
Okay, hold on. First Mortal Kombat film is terrible?
That's... I can't say the first Mortal Kombat film is terrible. It's actually an American cinema classic. It is an incredible example of camp. It is also thrilling to watch. It's responsible for one of the best electronic music songs ever, 1995's Mortal Kombat. That song is a classic. I feel like
Thank you for answering the question for me. This is fantastic. I don't have to talk.
Very strong feelings there. Go ahead.
I know. I think anybody who has any affection for the series also loves that first movie. It's very silly.
But is it love or is it hate love?
No, there's no hate. I was, again, the perfect age. I was like 12 or something when this movie came out, and I loved Mortal Kombat. It is not as violent as this one for a variety of reasons we might get into about the negative reaction to violence in the games. But it does capture just like a sense of fun and grand silliness that it was appealing to kids at that time, and I think would still be appealing to kids if they watched it today. It's more of a superhero-y kind of environment than this more gritty, almost Fast and Furious-esque Mortal Kombat film that came out this year.
Okay, Karen, you seem to have really strong feelings about this. How old were you when you saw that film?
I was a child.
You were 6 years old? Okay.
Yeah, look, this is like my parents made me, like, allowed me to watch a lot of R-rated movies I definitely shouldn't have seen. Like, just, you know, I have a degree in cinema studies, and the journey I took on mainstream cinema was the one I think a lot of people who have studied cinema are familiar with, where you go in and you think that, you know, with a lot of disdain for the craft that goes into making movies like this, and then you come out and you just love any movie that allows you to feel joy. And the thing that you get out of Mortal Kombat is lots of heads exploding, people acting ridiculous, people shooting laser beams and like lightning at, and like a guy with six arms. Like, there's no expression of joy greater than that in cinema for me. It's like someone just watching a whole bunch of actors have an excellent time. Also, Jean-Claude Van Damme is in that movie. Like, you can't say that movie's bad. Jean-Claude Van Damme is there.
That is Street Fighter. Yeah. Jean-Claude Van Damme is in Street Fighter, not in Mortal
Kombat.
Oh,
he's in Street Fighter?
Mortal Kombat, yes. And the Mortal Kombat 1995 film is a PG-13, so it's perfectly fine for the whole family.
This conversation is bringing me so much joy. Karen, your take.
I mean, I will admit that I am not familiar with the first two Mortal Kombat movies that came out, but I've seen enough clips to kind of get the gist of what everyone's talking about. And I will say, like, the longer that I live, I guess, and the more movies that I watch, the more I'm inclined to feel kindly towards movies like this and towards the first, like, 1995 Mortal Kombat movie, where it's like, as long as you're committing to the bit that you're doing, as long as you're doing something ambitious and at least doing one thing well, or even just committing to something ambitious and failing, it's more interesting than any movie that's just doing mediocre things and just doing okay at them. Like, I'm sure I'll come under fire for this, but I feel more kindly towards this Mortal Kombat movie than I do towards the majority of, like, Marvel movies that we've seen recently, which are kind of retreading the same formula and not trying anything new. Whereas with this, it's like, it's perfectly silly, it's not trying to be taken too seriously, and it's fun in that respect.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like I was thinking about this last night, actually, the comparison to Marvel movies. In general, right now, American audiences are really only seeing one kind of action movie. And I really wanted to say, you know, in terms of those movie cinematography, they're shot in a ways that make the costumes really visible, because ultimately they are, in some ways, advertisements for everything else the Disney and Marvel properties have to offer in terms of merchandising. So they don't look great, you know? Yeah. They're really washed out, you know, they look like they're shot in a parking lot a lot of the time. And not only that, but it's really created this environment where every single representation of magical powers in Marvel movies now are like glowing orbs. And it's just so refreshing to watch a movie where, like, someone's magical power is straight up a laser beam they shoot out of their eyeball, instead of just like glowing orbs and people kind of clearly floating on wires in the middle of an airport hangar. You know, it feels refreshing, and it's so lucky that this movie was able to draw on the bombastic visuals of the original Mortal Kombat games.
This is all really fascinating to me. We got this comment from Memphis on Twitter who said, I have pretty low expectations initially, but the action reeled me in quickly. I love an action movie that doesn't take forever before we get a good action or fight scene. And Double Complex tweets, I haven't seen it yet, but watched the first two in theaters. Video game movies should reflect the game they're inspired by. Fighting games might be better cheesy, while games with deep lore like Zelda would benefit from a deeper, well-acted fantasy trilogy. Now, Karen, in your review of the movie, you talk about how the film works because it leans into the silly, insane fight scenes. Explain a bit more how the fight scenes are handled in the film.
So, I mean, there's a very practical aspect to why a lot of the fight scenes work, which is that most of the actors, if not all of them, are doing the majority of their own stunts. And you can tell, like, through editing, like, I think of a lot of action movies where you can kind of clearly tell that a stunt double is doing the work, because you either don't see the character's face for about 2 minutes, or you see they suddenly have a completely different body type, or they look deep faked when you do see their face. That's completely not true of this movie. It all feels very, very real, which is why the one fight that involves a hugely CGI character is the one scene that kind of falls flat.
We got this tweet from Nick who says, am I misremembering that there were two camps back then, those who loved Mortal Kombat and those who were more into Street Fighter? Dave?
Absolutely. I think that is not so much a division in video game culture now, or I think, you know, we see the benefits and the drawbacks of both franchises, but certainly when I was a kid, boy, you were either a Street Fighter person or a Mortal Kombat person. I was a Mortal Kombat person because it had the blood. It had violence. It was like, it was tawdry. It was something I shouldn't be playing. It's something that I had to play in secret, or, you know, Super Nintendo had the one that didn't have the blood and the violence, but the Sega one did, and I had a Sega and my friends had a Nintendo. So I got to be the cool kid who you could come over and play Mortal Kombat 2 with the blood and the fatalities and all of the stuff that parents were afraid of at the time. So yeah, I mean, I never connected to Street Fighter because I thought the story, the lore, the mythology was shallow compared to Mortal Kombat, which Mortal Kombat had a connection to, I think, a lot of the things that were appealing about martial arts films in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, whereas Street Fighter just kind of felt like, I don't know, just an amalgamation of things that didn't fit together.
Well, we talked to director Simon McCoy about the process of planning out those fight scenes that, yeah, turn kind of gory at times.
We spent a lot of time working very early on in plotting out all the fights, not designing them any straight away, but plotting them out on a holistic level and saying, okay, these are all the fights within the film. And we set up a fight graph, which was showing how much time it was having in the film, how much, what it was doing, who was in it, what style of film. And then we started to work out what style each fight needed to have, what ingredients needed to make up each fight, what story was being moved forward, what character development was being created inside the fights. And I storyboarded the whole film, and then that was up on the wall, and then we could isolate each of these fights, and we knew holistically what each one needed to do.
Now, I'll say that a lot of the gore in the film is, it's very cartoony, but when the Mortal Kombat games first came out, as Dave alluded to, there were fears that they would inspire real-life violence, and a lot of that pushback came from politicians and members of the media. Gita, how do you think things have changed since then?
Well, during the Trump administration, there was sort of an attempt to use video games as a scapegoat for, you know, shootings and school shootings and violence, as it had been used in the past around the time that Mortal Kombat came out. There was essentially just a moral crusade against violent video games, trying to use them as a, you know, trying to pin the reason for mass shootings and school shootings on violent video games rather than our abysmal gun control laws. And I just feel like people have lived through so many of these. You know, you can't live through Sandy Hook. Like, it's really kind of personal for me in some ways. Yeah. I'm from Connecticut, and I, you know, Joe Lieberman represented the state that I lived in for a long time and was saying a lot, really saying a lot of these things and, you know, running this moral crusade. And then, you know, you grow up and you live through Sandy Hook, which is something that has touched people in my life. And you cannot actually, it doesn't make sense anymore to say that the fault for this is violent video games. You know, when you look at Mortal Kombat, it's sort of obvious. It's obvious to anyone that has two brain cells rubbed together what they're doing. It's camp. You know, children on the school ground do not have a pit of spikes to throw their enemies into. You know, the kinds of violence that they're, you know, demonstrating in these movies just can't actually exist in the real world. So this is, we've now sort of moved on to other things that the conservative animus is trying to pin school shootings on, essentially. And video games are no longer, like, under that eye of Sauron. So there's a lot more leeway for the kinds of imagery, the kinds of stories, and the ways in which they can be campy in the current day.
The way you just slid in that Tolkien reference was pretty remarkable. Karen, I want to hear your thought.
I mean, I completely agree. I think the reason that we're able to watch a movie like this new Mortal Kombat and not think that its violence will spark similar incidents in real life is because it's so far removed from anything that happens there in real life. If anything, the discussion around violence in fiction prompting real life violence, I think, has been more focused on movies at this point, perhaps because we've moved on from video games as a flashpoint for this, but it's more movies like John Wick or kind of more active shooter situations where people start to think, well, this is less fictional, this is less camp, is this going to have an effect on our real life? But Mortal Kombat definitely doesn't fall into that category.
Well, one of you tweets this: sadly, video game movies are historically terrible, from the 90s Mario Brothers to the recent Warcraft. There are lots of problems switching mediums for the narrative, and no one seems to have really capitalized on that. Well, we'll get into that question, what makes a good video game movie, after the break. We're discussing the newest Mortal Kombat in this month's 1A Movie Club. More from you and our guests in a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
Hi, it's Jen White. From politics to pop culture, 1A is the place for the national conversation on NPR. And our upgraded 1A Vox Pop app is the fastest and easiest way to add your voice. You'll see the latest and get a jump on upcoming stories all at the press of a button. Download the new 1A Vox Pop app for iOS and Android today and make yourself heard loud and clear on 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now let's get back to Mortal Kombat. We asked you to tell us what you think makes a good video game movie, and here's what Jesse in Florida and Matt in Chicago had to say.
I've been playing video games since I was 12, basically. And what makes a good video game movie is nothing. Nothing makes a good video game movie. The stories are usually incoherent and nonsensical. It's there for a form of entertainment, not to make grand storytelling. The only good video game movie was Scott Pilgrim vs. the World because it just played on video game tropes.
Okay, it's got to have really good humor that everybody can get. It's got to have inside jokes that the gamers of that game could get. It's got to have a great soundtrack. Like, I'm talking super awesome, in-your-face soundtrack. The music of the game should be in the movie somehow, maybe done by famous bands. The more fantastical, the better. And if you can get, like, a super famous performer to be in your movie, like John Leguizamo is in Mario Brothers, definitely do that.
And Eric tweets this, there's never been a good movie based on a video game. For the types of stories they tell, video games are the superior medium. Why allow someone else to spoon-feed you their interpretation when you can take part in shaping an interactive narrative? Dave, what do you think makes a good video game movie?
Well, first of all, I have to say, kudos to that second audio clip. The enthusiasm that that person had is, he should be a movie executive with his very clear ideas of what a video game movie should be. But I think, John Leguizamo aside, I do feel like these movies do need to have, as he pointed out, some connection to the game. The game and the movie are separate entities. They have to be because the storytelling is different in video games versus movies. In video games, you are the star of the show. You are the protagonist. You are playing as a character and you dictate what is going to happen, on obviously some rails designed by the video game developers, but for the most part, you're in charge. In a movie, you are in a passive experience. You are observing what is happening, and therefore you can't have the same kind of story. At least with Mortal Kombat, it's a fighting game translated to feature film, so there's always an element of spectacle to a fight. You can always just kind of enjoy watching a fight. But you don't necessarily find yourself enjoying a tiny Italian plumber jumping up and down on mushrooms and falling into pipes. That's not necessarily a spectator sport. So I think you have to have some elements of the game that people who love the game will recognize, but you have to distill the game down to its most basic levels and say, all right, what can we use from this to craft an actual story? And that's why Mario Brothers simply didn't work, is because there isn't really a story to Mario Brothers.
Gita, what do you think?
I think in general, obviously, every single way that you can tell a story, whether it be a play, book, movie, what have you, has different pros and cons in terms of how you can tell that story. You know, in a play, the intimacy of being so close to the actors in the set, it really creates an experience that is transportive in a way that other kinds of medium are not. In a book, you are not limited by budget, and you can also sort of make scenes last longer or be shorter just depending on how quickly someone will read it. And everyone that reads a book is going to have to read every single word, so you can be as detailed as you want to. I feel like a lot of the time people say that video games, the pro to video games is that they're interactive. But I don't really believe that that is necessarily true. I feel like all art is interactive. All art is asking for something from the person that is interacting with it. You have to understand art, you have to be vulnerable with it. You have to open up some part of yourself to it. Even in the cases of like something really silly like Mortal Kombat, I feel like every time I look at these games, I'm allowing my inner six-year-old to come out that really likes violence to be like, yeah, yeah. And I feel like in order to make a good video game movie, you do have to be respectful of those facts, you know, that video games are just going to tell a story in a different way than a movie does. But I feel like, you know, listening to those voicemails that we got, I just feel like sometimes people who are deeply engrossed in the culture of video games, they watch movies in a way that's different from I do, which isn't bad per se, but it is just like not the reason why I go to the cinema. And the things that I would like to see reflected in video game adaptations of movies are being able to hit those really strong emotional beats. I've been playing Nier, Nier Replicant, which is a very good game with an incredible plot that has delivered in some really ingenious ways with respect to its medium. And I've been thinking about how, if you could at all, adapt it. And the key would really just to be making sure the characters hit all the emotional beats that they do in the game. And you might have to change how you tell the story in order to reflect that. But I feel like having too much allegiance to what the fans want out of a video game movie actually can have some hold some directors behind.
Karen, I want to hear from you on this too.
I completely agree with Gita on the front of, like, there is an inherent block in translating something that was created in one medium to another. Video games aren't exceptional in that respect, but I also feel like the medium of video games has kind of evolved into something that is inherently more cinematic. Like, more video game directors are structuring their games in ways that are similar to movies. Like, I'm thinking specifically right now of Hideo Kojima, who is obsessed with movies. His latest game, Death Stranding, he packed it full of movie stars and even movie directors. And you can tell that he wants to tell this in as much of a movie way as possible. The cutscenes are so long, the gameplay is kind of scattered in there at the end. But the bigger point, I guess, is that there's so much technology has come so much further that video games can tell more expansive stories, whereas in the beginning, it's something as simple as Pong, where it's you're just batting a ball back and forth. That's not really something that you can make a movie out of. But things like, for example, we have an adaptation of The Last of Us coming along for TV. Like, that is a really rich story that you can easily spin and create a story for the screen. And I feel like some more recent video game movies have been successful in that respect. Like, Mortal Kombat obviously is not a very story-heavy movie, but things like Detective Pikachu, for instance, I thought did a pretty good job of translating a movie or translating a video game from console to screen in a way that was coherent, didn't really lose the spirit of the games at all, and still made sense and was fun as a movie.
Well, Fahim emailed this. I played the original Mortal Kombat in an arcade back in 1992 when I was 9, and life has never been the same ever since. The movie was awesome through and through. I liked every character. They each played a pivotal role in the overall plot. Unlike the 95 version, it didn't bother me that there was no actual tournament. I enjoyed the character development and build up to it. And Steven emails, haven't seen the new film, but this conversation is definitely making me want to venture out to theaters or sign up for HBO. As for the original movie, I was also the perfect age when it came out, 14 or 15. I fondly remember my best friend and I buying the soundtrack on CD afterwards. I'm sorry. There's some kid out there saying, what's a CD? As a movie, yeah, it's silly, but so is the source material. Where we asked Mortal Kombat director and producer Simon McCoy about a potential Mortal Kombat sequel, and here's what he had to say about that.
All of us, throughout the whole process of the film, never talked openly about the S word. We never really talked about sequels. You do a little tiny bit, knowing that there are opportunities there, especially with Mortal Kombat, which has such a rich treasure trove of characters and ideas. So yeah, there's obviously stuff sitting around, but we've never really talked about it in great detail. We've done a couple of things in the film, little joiner pieces, you could call them, but it's not for us to decide whether there's a sequel. It's whether the fans and the new audiences and super fans, whether they like the film enough to want a sequel. And then if they do, then of course.
I mean, Dave, did you get the feeling while watching this movie that they weren't thinking about a sequel potential?
I almost laughed during that clip of him saying, oh, we were talking about a sequel. No, of course you were. There's, again, I have to stress this again, and I know some people don't care. Well, you're wrong for not caring. There's no tournament in this movie. They're building to the tournament. And Johnny Cage, sorry, spoiler alert, Johnny Cage is teased in the last scene of the movie. We're going to go find Johnny Cage. look, this is designed from the beginning to be a franchise. And I think one of the things that we have not talked about when it comes to video game adaptations in feature films is the most important question, which is why? Why are we making these movies? Why do we feel like we need to take something like The Last of Us, which is a great story, told very well in its original medium, and make it less interesting by making it a flat TV adaptation? Like, what are we doing this for? I think with Mortal Kombat, it makes a certain amount of sense because there are elements of the storytelling that are missing. It's a fighting game, but there is this mythology. So it kind of fits nicely into a medium where you can expand the characters and have more things happening and for them to have rich inner lives, hopefully, as this franchise continues. With something like Death Stranding or The Last of Us, these are things that are already perfect. Why would we want to make movies out of them? When the medium of video games has matured so much that it can stand next to a movie and say, we're just as good as you.
So we got this message from Moonbird, who tweets, video game movies are proof that Hollywood hedges bets against original material in favor of money in the bank. Art is not dead, but it's a needle in Studio City's haystack. And Gita, I wonder if that is part of the answer to Dave's question, why are we making these movies?
That's such a cynical and really sad way to look at art. I don't know. It makes me really upset when people are just like, blah, everybody's just doing things for money. We live in a capitalist society. You need to have money to live. I'm sorry. It really, you know, video game movies, there's, especially in the case of something like The Last of Us, which was so self-consciously designed to mimic a mode of television, you know, the prestige television of The Sopranos or Mad Men. It's really clear sometimes why people, like in the case of The Last of Us, Neil Druckmann himself wanted to translate these stories from video games into movies or into television shows. You know, if you are a person who has designed a video game that is clearly heavily inspired by different kinds of television shows that have aired on HBO, the chance to adapt it into that medium is, I'm sure, irresistible to you, especially because they've gotten such an incredible cast with, you know, Diego Luna. I don't know what happened there.
It's okay.
And Pedro Pascal, who I think is the only good celebrity. I feel like there's nothing less like guaranteed than the adaptation of a video game into a movie, right? They're historically, you know, colloquially known as being incredibly bad. You know, the potential of having a built-in fan base is, you know, pretty enticing, I'm sure, but not as, you know, it is not a guarantee of success, especially in a world where the biggest movies that make the most money in the bank are ones that are just like within this Marvel studio machine. I feel like the desire to animate, to adapt these things, in some of the cases of the more recent video game adaptations, really do come down to the director and the people in the project having an interest in it. Mortal Kombat is more of a corporate product, but there is absolutely, you know, we are reaching a point where the people that grew up with Mortal Kombat are now the major drivers of the economy. It is like our time for our entertainment to be the mainstream. And that is the reflection we're seeing, more necessarily. If there's any sort of attempt to chase the money here, it's attempt to chase millennials.
And we should mention that the Mortal Kombat video game originally came out in 1992. So people of a certain age with, you know, maybe some disposable income or perhaps going to the movies or, you know, renting them online. Dave, go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to piggyback off of this and say I think the question is certainly not about money. I think the question of why should always come down to the art, whether or not it feels as though the story told in the video game can be told differently or with some kind of unique quality that can only come from a movie or a television show. Like, I just think it shouldn't be about money. It should be about what can we do that's special here.
Well, Mortal Kombat was released in theaters and on the streaming platform HBO Max. So was Godzilla vs. Kong. That's another fantasy action movie that's doing well financially. We got this tweet from Justin who says, does this mean we could finally get a Halo movie? And Karen, I wonder what you think, you know, this says about the types of movies people want to watch right now and what we might see in the future.
I guess to be cynical, I'm sorry, Gita, like there is a certain degree to which I feel like people want to see more of the things that they're familiar with and more of the things that they like, which is like why, for example, like I am interested in a Last of Us series and I'm interested to see what they do. Especially, I will say, partially because I'm a scaredy cat and can't get through the games on their own. Like I want to see the movie so I can experience the whole thing in some format. But I mean, it's an inevitable product of society. Like I think the people who are involved with these games or with these movies adapted from games are going to be people who are invested in them because you don't want someone to work on a project who doesn't have a love for it. But on the same token, like the reason that these projects are going to get greenlit in the first place is partially to do with the fact that they know that people have this pre-existing feelings towards them and will see these movies.
That's Karen Hahn. She's a staff writer at Slate. You also heard from Gita Jackson. She's a staff writer at Motherboard from Vice and the co-host of Waypoint Radio. And Dave Schilling. He co-hosts the Galaxy Brains podcast from Polygon. Thanks to you all. Remember to subscribe to the 1A podcast. It's where you'll find our best guests and stories every day, and you can get it wherever you find your podcasts. Today's producer was Arfi Getty. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again. This is 1A.